Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Inside SEP. This shorter form show is focused on sharing the expertise within SEP's walls on topics related to building great products. Today we're talking about design. And for some, this can be a confusing conversation to have, and for others, a frustrating one. So I asked our Director of User Experience, Noelle Webster-Milam, to shed some light on the world of design and to help us demystify this valuable part of building great products. So, if you find these things confusing or frustrating, hopefully this conversation will bring some clarity to your world. Hope you enjoy.
You're recording now.
I'm actually going to hit the record button.
All right.
Obviously, Noelle, you and I have talked about this multiple times over the last 5 years, and as one of the hats that I wear of being sales at SEP, I get the privilege of hearing so many different definitions, beliefs about what is design and what value does the big D design bring to product development and software.
And
there's a whole range out there.
whole range.
I'm curious, like, how do you think about it?
You know, I think because big D design covers anything from architecture to interior design to and software design.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now we get confusing because everybody wants kind of like the qualifier in front of their word of design. So when you talk about big D design, everybody who went to design school has learned the basic elements of what it takes to be a designer, but they have their specific context that they're applying it towards. So it's confusing.
Yeah.
It's confusing.
I hadn't really thought about like non-software industries and how that might even muddy the water even more so for our world.
So like, what if said person's partner in life is an interior designer? You now have a script that you think through things only through that lens.
Yes.
And making things beautiful. And that's not what it means.
Such a good way of thinking about it. So, okay, educate me and anybody listening. Like, how do you think we should think about design as it relates to software products?
You know, I've been noodling a lot on this. And trying to find the sweet spot to try to articulate this in a way that folks will understand. So for software design specifically, since we just put anything out there, let's narrow in here about software design. So let's say that sits at the intersection of business and art.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
How does that land with you?
I like it. Okay. I hadn't really thought about that combination of words, but it creates a concrete idea in my head, I think.
So art has all of these elements of composition,
mm-hmm.
and business has their needs and objectives to release a product. And then there's a lot of ambiguity and intangibility in between. And that's where designers can show up to help bring incremental visualization and improvements and intention for everything that we want the outcome of the product to be,
right?
But also have that beautification that folks are expecting to see on the other side.
Yes, because it's not just visual design. Like, that's the easy thing that everybody can understand. Yes, it is visual design, but it's also how do you get a user of a piece of software the right information at the right times? How do you organize the system in a way that you surface the things that they want to see in less with less friction, and the things that they may only look at once a year with a little bit more friction?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the systems design of the software,
absolutely,
not just the visual design, and way more than I just explained, right?
Right. We want, in the industry that we work within for high risk kind of software, there's things that we want to make that are, given the right client, we want that to be a delightful user experience and solve a business problem. And there are other cases where we want the software to be a utilitarian tool.
Yes.
Solve the right problem, the right action at the right time so folks don't make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so important. It's so important to understand how people behave and what this needs to solve, and it has nothing to do about the visual.
That's so helpful. And, you know, the you know, risk is so common in conversations, whether we're talking about technical risk, talking about user risk, design risk, market risk. I mean, insert word plus risk. And, you know, there's books written about this stuff, I'm sure.
Uh-huh.
You know, as I think about, you know, like the success in the marketplace. No one can guarantee that.
No one can. No.
But there are some tried and true methods, tools, philosophies, processes mm-hmm. that can help you maybe have a better chance of success. And I feel like just like engineering, mm-hmm. de-risking some technical risk, design plays a part in the things that they're involved in the product life cycle.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I feel like it's something that is not often understood and maybe even believed.
That could, yes, I see enough evidence for that to be true. Yeah. Zach. So when it comes to de-risking for design, there are different disciplines inside of design. There is the folks that are thinking about ethnography.
Yeah.
And psychology, folks that are trying to understand the humans that will eventually be using this thing. What's the trigger need for this software to come into play inside of the thing that they're trying to get done? We could take that all the way from like an entertainment platform to a utilitarian tool that works inside of a large manufacturing industry. So that stuff happens for either context and anywhere in between. Yeah. We need to make sure that we're designing for the people who need to use it, and it also solves the business objective. So I've always, maybe I'm a traditionalist here, but to me, design has always been the merger of business needs and user goals.
Yeah.
Always. Any leaning towards one direction or another, you're inducing a ton of risk.
Yes. Yeah, if you lean more towards the user side and you forget what the business is trying to accomplish, you're misaligning potentially this thing that may not be in line with where the company or the product is trying to head towards. Mm-hmm. And you lean the other direction, you might build a thing that nobody wants to use.
Right.
That's a really, really, I think that's a really succinct way to understand that balance. Because there really is a balance.
There is balance. There is so much we have to consider when we're evaluating as the product is developed from start to finish. Are we starting in a case where we're greenfield and we don't know what folks want, or do we have a pretty good idea of what we think folks need? Mm-hmm. And how do we know that?
Yeah.
We will challenge folks' thinking on purpose because we like to show up as doctors,
yeah. Order
takers, yes. Right? We're not here to slow down the problem as designers. We're here to make it more efficient, consistent, 100%. Usable.
Yeah.
And meet all of your, you know, our available, usable, feasible, viable, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
four circles what looks
a Venn diagram,
like.
Yeah.
It's like a butterfly to me. But whatever it is now, we are looking at all of those. And to me, those have always been hats that we need to wear. Mm-hmm. They're not how to show up.
Yeah, I love that. Yes.
Yeah.
And if you know, within SEP, you know, you've built and crafted our design practice with a couple of different like titled roles that have a little like they can blend a little bit towards each other, but for the most part, their roles are designed to focus on different things. Mm. Can you describe like how you think about design at SEP and how that plays in kind of the larger ecosystem outside of our walls?
Yeah. So, I mean, we talked about it before when we started discussing all of this. We put the word in front of design to be more specific about
right.
the type of design that we're doing. And in our industry, it's gone, you know, even before there was user interface design, then it comes UX design, and now it's product design. And everybody is in this clamoring of, like, I want to have product in my title somehow. When essentially we're all on the same ship steering to the same destination. It really doesn't matter what's in your title. It's how do you enable others to do good work? So the roles that we have are called an interaction designer. And those folks usually have like a human computer interaction background.
Okay.
They are thinking about the ethnography, the psychology, the generative research as to how do humans or this business behave in their current environment and what is going wrong that they need to build some sort of piece of software to solve for that problem.
Yeah.
Then you apply systems thinking and information architecture and the actual practice of interaction design, which, you know, we can talk about in another episode.
Yeah, so, yes.
All of those things together, you take this intangible, you know, between art and business, right? Like all these things start to become more concrete as you apply these practices.
Yes.
And the other side is our UX designer role, which is a bit more of a generalist. So those folks have an actual visual service delivery. They are taking whatever came to be from the early onset of the thinking of how to solve this problem and putting it into a concrete form. And it usually has a very high degree of polish.
Yeah.
They are working on all the nuances of that system, and that is not to be considered an easy job by any means. There is so much that goes into a user interface, and making it consistent in order to make something simple is actually so hard.
I agree.
So they work on design systems so that there is an, it's easy for engineers to just say, oh, we're reusing this component. We're going to build this into this library. I'm introducing this component here and here and here. I'm not having to rewrite that piece of code across the platform.
Yeah. So, and let's say you change it down the road, makes even updates super easy when you have that design system in place.
Super easy.
Yeah.
And we're even working on design tokens in that right. role.
Yes.
Where designers can actually influence the code base. So if there's an icon change or a color adjustments, you know, the 40 shades of blue at Google. Sort of as you land on the blue that you want, you can actually introduce that and through a pipeline into the development environment. It's pretty great.
Yeah.
That is not to be said that these are two silos by any means, because every designer won't get to work with an interaction designer and UX designer at the same time. But our projects call for different needs and contexts at different times. So the title is meant to be, how is this person going to defaultly show up? And where will they stretch to?
Yes.
So if, like, I am, you know, I have a master's in human-computer interaction. I have a new media informatics undergrad, but it will take me a very long time to create a brand new brand. Like, that's just, I want to, like, look at the, how are we going to build the system and how are we going to apply the brand across all these things? I can do it. It's just going to take me a long time.
Yeah, it's not the thing that you are, like, naturally efficient and proficient in. Not that you couldn't do it.
Right.
I love that description. That's, even outside of an environment like SEP, where, you know, we're a consulting firm, I have to imagine, at least my past experience working at product companies, it's a similar way that designers or just makers in general show up. I might be really good and naturally suited for X set of tools and skills, but it doesn't mean I can't go be dangerous somewhere else and help. I just won't be as good as somebody that's super deep in that area.
Right. So given how our client needs to show up, like how fully baked is their idea or product concept, whatever it may be, we try to find the right person to fit that need given what they need to build. The sooner you can introduce design into your product lifecycle, the less risk you're going to have inside of your product, because we're constantly evaluating and de-risking as we go, all the way down to, like, is this format better to communicate an alert, or is this format better to communicate the alert? And that's so important because you need people to take immediate action. So I worked on something quite a few years ago that needed to be seen, like, across the room, like inside of a tent, when somebody was putting samples into a machine and it was running and processing, but they had many other tasks to be doing at that time, but they needed to take immediate action on those findings should anything pop up as an alert or a concern. So it was like a 10-foot experience. I needed to design something that is seen from at least 10 feet away, has a larger display, is more prominent, has nothing to do with delight, it has everything to do about efficiency and urgency and action taking, which is a very different way to show up than a general B2C consumer app.
Right. Well, and it's not even just I don't really like this term, but I hear it a lot, GUI, or the UI. Again, it's a way.
I know.
But it is a mental model, right? That existed for a while, and it still exists, right? So, you know, it's not just the screen on my iPad. Like, you're actually talking about a true, like, human computer environment.
Yes.
Right. The way that we're actually interacting with technology, which I think is kind of this subtle element of our world of software and technology that not a lot of people really think about.
I think, like we said before, most people think of design as something visual.
Yes.
The delight of the application.
Yeah.
Yes. How modern it is. Does it match my expectation? Does it look like what the FANG companies look like, or a delighter of some sort, the ones that are winning awards, right? We don't build apps like that here a lot.
Yeah, not as often. I agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we do have a few here or there.
Absolutely.
That actually, maybe we should submit
We should. Yeah. Yeah. Done some great work. It's so interesting. I feel like it's oftentimes harder to maybe like quantify the actual business value of design sometimes. You know, mm-hmm. I feel like engineering is it's an easier thing to have this concrete thought in our minds. Mm-hmm. How do you think people should think about the value that design brings to their teams and their products?
You know, I was listening to a podcast this morning, and it was a podcast about the business value of design. So it was very
perfect. It's very apt.
It's very timely. And one person asked the interviewer, and how do you need to be prepared to state the value of design to your team or your stakeholders or whatever it may be? And then he further stated, is that a designer's responsibility? Should it be a two-way street? Should there be some others out there that are actually going out to learn these things on their own? Why are designers the ones that are kind of getting nested under product, invisible, and almost like the servants of product? Those are their words, not mine. I don't believe designers are servants of product. I believe everybody works all together, but in our company, it doesn't function like that whatsoever.
Yeah.
But I can see in other applications where that may be the case.
Sure.
So I think it's a two-way street, but right now, designers need to be better at change management than they are.
That's a really critical thing at a lot of companies. Change management's hard.
It's super hard, and it's not what you signed up for.
That's true. That is very true. Yeah, I feel like it is, you know, our world, we often talk about how fast it changes and how fast things evolve. Mm-hmm. And yet I think our like mental models, the longer we've been in the world, the slower some of those new changes and innovations take in our brains to conclude some new thing. I think that is a really challenging dynamic when talking about the way that roles are and show up. And there's, you know, now we have an ops qualifier, a suffix at the end of
we have the prefix and the
suffix. Yeah, that's true. Actually, there is a prefix and a suffix there. Yeah, you know, there's design ops, there's CX ops, there's product biz ops, product ops.
Yeah.
And while none of those are like brand new as of, you know, February 2024, they're still relatively new in the grand scheme of technology, right? Over the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so hard to keep up with and understand and sometimes drive some of the conclusions in our own heads when we're thinking about the roles and the way people show up on teams. Mm-hmm. It's a hard thing to do. And I think design is definitely one of those that has matured quite a bit here recently.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still a lot of things coming out on how the value exchange really shows up every day. It's really hard to say that concretely.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of cases, like we as designers need to be better at articulating what is the business value or even the financial value that comes out of the inclusion of our work on teams, which is hard at times. It's like, cool, I built you a design system.
Right. What does that actually mean?
What does that mean?
Yes.
So what it means is that we built patterns that are reusable, mm-hmm. and we can go deeper into the problem space by not having to spend time on the nuance. And then you have also built consistency in the application. There's a subliminal experience that folks have when using an application that if anything just like slightly adjusts or shifts is not in a consistent spot, they start to, over time, distrust.
Yes.
Your brand.
Yeah, and I'd agree.
That's essentially what we do, is we build consistency and trust and like create emotional connection to your brand and your business case.
I love that. And I mean, practically speaking, it saves you money in the long run because you're not, even from an engineering, like to codify the thing, it takes less time.
Right. One engineer does it once and you can reuse it across the application.
Exactly. I mean, that is such a practical and real value exchange that I think is sometimes missed.
It's kind of this the mortar and a mosaic. We make a lot of stuff enabled.
Yeah.
But it's kind of invisible along the way.
You know, Noelle, I think there are so many things as part of this conversation that we've touched on. Mm-hmm. And if from a time perspective, I want to have a couple follow-up shows. I think it would be really fun to go deeper on the way that we think about our roles as designers in our building, thinking like some of the tools and the techniques and the artifacts that they create and where that benefits teams and businesses. Mm-hmm. I think that would be a really great conversation to have as a follow-up. And I also think it would be really good for anybody that has yet to add a design role onto their teams. What are the things that they should really be thinking about or considering as they embark on that journey? What's the one, maybe two things that are going to be really important in making that decision and finding the right person, adding the right skill set to help them level up and get some of the benefits that we're talking about? I feel like those would be two great follow-up conversations.
So them, you mean our client?
Correct. Okay. But anybody about to build software, yeah.
There's a whole spectrum inside of this that we can make a crafted experience for a business to solve problems. We don't have this cookie cutter process where we just say all the research all the time.
Yeah.
We look at what do we need to de-risk?
Yeah.
What do we need to know? And how can we make a plan to make that fit for you?
And prioritize that and, and the things that we really need to go do and the things that maybe we don't ever get to.
The things that we're willing to take a bet on.
That's a good point. Well, thank you so much. Yeah. I look forward to, we're going to create a little mini series out of this through 2024.
Sounds good.
We're going to demystify design all year long.
I'm very much looking forward to it.
It'll be good. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Zach.